Frank Beckman Show on WJR. I'm Kathy Hoekstra of the Mackinac Center, filling in for Frank on this Monday morning. Gorgeous Monday morning. Sitting with me in the studio, I have the one and only Henry Payne, Detroit News editorial cartoonist, the editor of The Michigan View, writer for the National Review. Boy, you do all kinds of things. Nice to see you, Henry.
Hey, Kathy. Nice to see you.
Well, you know, when we earlier this morning in the first hour of the program, I interviewed the gentleman who did the portrait of Governor Granholm. It was unveiled in Lansing last week. Lots of pomp and circumstance surrounding the unveiling of the portrait. And in the Michigan View, themichiganview.com, you wrote a piece which I thought was rather interesting, and I wanted to talk about Granholm versus Engler: A Tale of Two Portraits. Talk about this.
Well, it's an interesting opportunity, I think. I mean, the Granholm portrait is kind of a strange portrait. Mm-hmm. A lot of symbolism is in it, as are most of these portraits, but in her case, a lot of symbolism.
Right. I thought so too. Yeah.
Yeah, in which she's been on this legacy tour, and she's trying to establish herself as the to take credit for whatever good comes in the coming Michigan economy. But what we did at The View was we went back and looked at the Engler portrait, which sits right next to her portrait in the Capitol Rotunda. And it's a wonderful opportunity, I think, to look at what works in this state and what does not work. And the wonderful thing about having Engler and Granholm side by side in the Capitol is that those are the two polar opposites of the Michigan political debate. That's conservative, that's liberal, that's Ronald Reagan, it's Barack Obama. And if you look at the last year, 8 years under Granholm, what she has really done is practice Obamanomics in this state. Massive stimulus in the case of this state, road funds, massive stimulus in 2007, and then massive political giveouts to select industries, the film industry, the green industry in particular, claiming, just like Barack Obama did, that would stimulate Michigan's economy. Did not happen. Then you go look at John Engler. Go look at his portrait right next to Granholm's portrait.
Right.
No symbolism. All you get in John Engler's portrait is books. Ronald Reagan's biography, the Constitution. He wears an Adam Smith necktie. And what is profoundly different from the Granholm portrait, the Granholm philosophy, and the Engler philosophy is Engler and conservatives believe if you lay the political framework, if you establish a good economic climate, good things will happen. Entrepreneurs will flourish. Capital will come. And that's exactly what happened during the 12 years of John Engler. Had the lowest unemployment rate in modern Michigan history at 3%. As opposed to Granholm, who went out and selected all these industries that she wanted to come here. Mm-hmm. Turned out they're not job producers. You know, the green industry produced, what, 300 jobs, I think?
Right, yeah, 315 jobs in 2008 generated by the wind and solar energy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, our buddy Tom Gantert over at CapCon mm-hmm. reported that over the weekend. And the unemployment rate under Granholm skyrocketed. It doubled, went to 15%. And I think that's really, it's a wonderful way for citizens in this country. Just go and look at those two portraits, see what those portraits symbolize, and see what works in this state. And I'm happy to say that the current governor, Rick Snyder, I think, seems to be much more in the Engler mode.
Well, just on a side note, when I talked to the gentleman who painted the portrait earlier this morning for maybe listeners who are just joining us, I did ask him if he was a Granholm supporter and if he'd be willing to do Governor Snyder's portrait, and he said, "Oh, by all means." He said the experience was just thrilling for him. He had a good time doing it, and he would do the same thing for Governor Snyder. So I just want to put that disclaimer out there that he saw it as being commissioned for a job and thoroughly enjoyed it and would love to do it again.
Yeah.
So, there you
well,
go.
I know a portrait artist. I don't think he's done anything in this capital, but, you know, that's their business. They do these portraits, and it's a real feather in their cap to mm-hmm, get a governor. Mm-hmm. And this guy, I think he's from...
He's from Ferndale.
Ferndale,
Charles
yeah.
Pompilius.
Yeah, it's a beautiful mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Johannes Vermeer's work. any of your listeners familiar with that great classic 17th century Holland painter.
Sure.
And of course, to some degree, it's appropriate because I think the Granholm wind policies are very 17th century Holland.
That's a very good point. Well, you know, the saying goes, if you're not Dutch, you're not much. So maybe that's what was going on. I haven't the foggiest idea. I want to move to a different topic, which is something that you're very passionate about. I certainly am, too. Last fall, you were kind enough to include me on a panel discussion of the quote-unquote new media, the new online media. Frank Beckman was the moderator. We had my colleague Ken Braun of Michigan Capital Confidential and John Fund of the Wall Street Journal. And I think it was very valuable in discussing for a couple of things, what's wrong with the traditional media landscape and how the new online media is changing it. And of course, we've had the new media in the form of the Drudge Report, et cetera, for a lot of years, but toss in social media and networking, and you got quite the recipe for some momentum building. Are we doing things right? You with the Michigan View and all of the other efforts that are out there.
Yeah, I think, Kathy, I just think this is the most exciting time to be in media since I've been in this business in 25 years. And really, look at the big picture. This is the most exciting time to be in print media since the early 19th century. I mean, this is really what we're going through right now is the second great print revolution. The first was the drum press in the early 19th century that brought the press to the masses. Mm-hmm. Before that, it had just been an elite newsletters.
Right.
And now, in the early 21st century, with the internet, you're getting the second great revolution. But it's also part of a mix. I mean, the media really in the late 20th century had stagnated. I mean, it had become boring. It had become establishment. It had become excessively partisan. The mainstream media, you call it the legacy media, name you want to call it, had become partisan, had become tired.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, in that environment, other media have rushed in. And it's not just the internet. I mean, it's talk radio. It's this program. And what I've seen is that infrastructure build nationally first. The Drudge Report. Matt Drudge is the most influential journalist in America today. I mean, provides material for Rush, for Hannity, for the talk radio guys. Then you have the big dog on the block, Fox News, taking advantage of broadcast journalism. Again, a key element in national media. And you're a former broadcast mm-hmm. person. You know the reach of broadcast. I mean, that is really a powerful medium. And so those all work together, really, the internet, talk radio, Fox, nationally, to provide a real alternative to establishment media. And what we're seeing now on a local level here in Michigan, I think, with this program, with the Frank Beckman program, with other talk radio folks in Grand Rapids and Lansing, and now seeing it in the internet with Capital Confidential, the publication you work with at Mackinac, and the Michigan View, a commentary site with the Detroit News. I think you're at the state level now, at the local level. You're starting to see the same infrastructure build that you've seen on a national level for the last 15 years.
Well, and you mentioned some things I wanted to get into, and also, incidentally, coming up on the program in the last half hour, we'll be talking with the king of the new media, Andrew Breitbart himself, who's promoting a new book in which he talks about a lot of what you just mentioned. Now, what you do and how you've structured the Michigan View is that you're able to do a lot of things that are not quite under the umbrella of the Detroit News. Is that a fair statement? Do you have a little bit more freedom?
Oh, absolutely, and that's the idea, is to take the internet and really push the envelope. I mean, what we have going for us in the Detroit News, and again, this tells you how stagnated, how irrelevant the establishment media had become. Detroit News is the only conservative brand left in this state as a newspaper, the Detroit News editorial page. I mean, this is a rollicking political state, a swing state, an industrial state, a fascinating political state, and you had one consistent conservative editorial page. And so what we wanted to do with the Michigan View was expand that, to blow that out, take that out on the internet, make that a daily commentary site, much the way National Review, and to a lesser extent, sites like the Daily Caller, and the Washington Examiner do nationally. So we wanted to bring in the best writers from around the state Some of them had written for us before, some of them had not. Some of them are in talk radio, some are in print. I mean, we get think tank folks like yourself, so it's a wonderful mix that have the instant medium of the internet to comment on the news. And for example, the Granholm portrait. That story broke midday. That was announced, unveiled last Friday. One of our writers, Mike Brownfield, was right on the internet.
And, you know, Henry, one quick note on this. I ask you about having the freedom. Now, there is still a tie to the Detroit News, et cetera, and it seems like, you know, you're going to have inextricable links with people and entities that, you know, that own the Michigan View. How much editorial say do you have? I mean, would you say 100%? For instance, have you ever had to kill a story because of some sort of pressure from above, or kill one of your writings, or you know, nixed a column?
Yeah, well, no, we have total freedom on the View, and again, that was the idea, that was the concept, is that because of the instant nature of the internet, you want people to be able to speak their mind, and so the site, unlike an editorial page, the Detroit News editorial page. It's an editorial board product. Those are editorials. They're generally conservative, but they're written anonymously. They are meant to be the voice of the newspaper. A commentary site like the National Review and like the Michigan View here in Michigan is geared toward individuals. And so, you know, we really have the best writers in the state. We have the Mackinac folks. We have Beckman writing for us. We have Jason Vines, a wonderful humor columnist. Bill Johnson, the best urban columnist in the state, writes out of Detroit. Manny Lopez, one of the best auto opinion writers in the state. And so you want these people to speak their sure. mind, and you want them to do it instantaneously to analyze and comment on news as it happens. And so that's the model of the site, and it's provided wonderful freedom and I think a lot of fun. I mean, we've gone after politicians and held them accountable. John Dingell, Debbie Stabenow, activists like Michael Moore, in a critical way, but also a fun way that I think only the internet can bring it to you.
No, but you mentioned Michael Moore, and I know that's been he's one of your favorite topics on the Michigan View, and of course I've done some work at the Mackinac Center involving
Michael
him.
Michael and me.
And Michael and me, absolutely. I do want to mention, I should have brought this up when we had Congressman Hoekstra on the show talking about our relationship, because or lack thereof, we're not related at all. But Michael Moore made that mistake. And I spoke with him for about 20 minutes at a film office thing, and he finally said to me, "Say hi to your dad for me." And I had to tell him, my father passed away in 1982, so, thanks. And but he was actually visibly embarrassed about the whole thing. So,
well, I'll tell you, and the thing is, as a journalist, as a cartoonist, as well as a writer, I mean, hypocrisy is the mother's milk of satire. And Michael Moore is a very rich man. And he continues to go around the country pretending that he is a spokesman for the little man, the working guy, and it gets him in all kinds of trouble. And your piece, Michael and Me, exposing the fact that he had taken corporate welfare from this state was devastating. That is devastating. We did a piece on The View right after he made the announcement that all of rich people's wealth should be nationalized. We did a found this $5 million, multi-million dollar mansion he has up on Torch Lake, and we did a piece and said, so does that mean we nationalize your Torch Lake estate?
Sure.
There's so much material there. And again, the establishment media had gotten so dry and so partisan that it was ignoring these stories. And it's a great story, and it's not only a great story, which is what journalism is about. Mm-hmm. It's a great story.
Yep.
But it also informs the public about leaders that hope to inform public opinion. And Michael Moore, like him or hate him, is a opinion shaper.
He's one of those. Well, Henry Payne, we certainly hope you keep up the great work at themichiganview.com. Thank you so much for coming into the studio today. Great to see you, as always.
Well, thanks for having me, Kathy.
And this is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show. I'm Kathy Hoekstra, filling in for Frank on this sunny Monday morning. Well, perhaps your kids or grandkids or any children that you know of have read some of the books in the Michigan Chillers series or American Chillers series. The titles read something like Sinister Spiders of Saginaw, Mayhem on Mackinac Island, and that's not about the Republican Leadership Conference coming up this fall, by the way. And here's a good one, Dinosaurs Destroy Detroit. No Double Meanings in These Children Book Titles by Jonathan Rand. Joining me now on the Frank Beckman Show is Jonathan Rand himself, children's book author, also author of many other works. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Kathy.
Great to talk to you. First, I want to talk about the Chillers series. These books, you see them everywhere, bookstores, Meijer stores, all over the state, all over the country. Michigan Chillers, of course, taking place in cities and towns around Michigan. Several years ago, you branched out into American Chillers with stories from each state, Michigan Mega Monsters, one of my favorites, Ogres of Ohio. How accurate is that? How many states do you have so far?
I've got 30 states. Number 31 is just about finished. That's called the Nevada Nightmare Novel.
Okay, and these books are written, I hate to do this because I don't know how competitive you authors are, but they're kind of in the Goosebumps flavor, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't look at it as, you know, I mean, I really don't look at it as kind of competition. It's kind of a spooky, scary series of books. And if kids are reading, it doesn't matter whether they're reading Chillers or Goosebumps or Animorphs or Harry Potter.
Okay. Well, you know, in my house, we prefer your books because R.L. Stine, who writes Goosebumps, went to Ohio State. That's a whole nother thing. But you win out by default. Well, what's striking, though, you also write another series of books for even younger kids called Freddy Fernortner, Fearless First Grader. You write adult fiction along the line of Stephen King, and you've written a few books for even the in-between teenage crowd. What's striking about you, and again, we're talking with Jonathan Rand, the author of the Chillers series, a lot of authors and folks would be content with just writing the Chillers series and calling it a day. The books are wildly popular, but you've expanded your writings again to the other age groups. You've done serials with newspapers. You tour the state. You tour the country. You go give talks at schools. You opened a store up in Indian River called Chillermania, and you do something fascinating each summer called Author Quest. Will you ever stop?
I don't think so, because I'm having so much fun. We started doing this. We're doing this now, my wife and I really get we get to work together, which is really fantastic. And it's our 11th year, and you know, I look at it, I love to write, and I love to do things that are different. And, you know, this whole Author Quest thing has just been a kind of a logical expansion of the whole thing, about the whole reading and writing thing. And both camps have been filled now for summer months.
Just to interrupt, can you tell the listeners here what Author Quest is? Because this is so fascinating.
Yeah, it is a four-day summer camp we have. It's up in the wilderness of northern Michigan. I rent an entire camp for 4 days. The kids are there for 3 nights. It's all about reading. It's all about writing and being outdoors, learning about our natural world. I bring in authors from around the country. Kids come from around the country. We have kids from California, Maryland, Florida, and they come here. And the common denominator that all of these kids have is that they love to write. This is what they do. And you think about it, in the summertime, if kids like basketball or baseball or whatever, there's all kinds of camps all over the place. But there really isn't anything like this where they get to come and spend 4 days and hang out with their peers and really, really hone their writer's craft.
Right. And, you know, something that I think is fascinating, well, you and seriously, I bring this up, the fact that the wheels don't stop with you, because you embody the entrepreneurial spirit that makes this country great. I mean, you self-published. And if I recall from previous conversations, you've turned down a lot of offers to make your books into TV or movies. I mean, you're as independent as all get out. Now, and that being said, I know the entrepreneurial spirit in this nation and the state in particular, a lot of people think that has been under attack. It is not highly celebrated or encouraged in recent history. So you've had to overcome a lot of hurdles to just forge ahead and be successful, correct?
I've never been comfortable with the status quo in the publishing industry, and I never really cared for when I started seeing what was going on, I was like, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm going to do this my way. And I was told time and time again, you know, people would say, you can't run a publishing company like that. And I said, I'm not running a publishing company. I'm running a business, and the business is designed to earn money, and that's all there is to it. I've you know, been watchful of my bottom line, and I've been very, very careful. And you know, with the advent of movies, we're starting to delve into that a little bit. But right now, the way it's working is it's working on my terms. I was not going to bite into the typical Hollywood scenario and just do things the way everybody else was doing things. It's going to be a little different for me.
All right, that's so refreshing to hear, and hopefully, you will help inspire a lot of other people. And one thing, very quickly, is that you travel around the country and you get to see the business climate in other states as compared to here in Michigan. Is that right? What's some of the more striking differences?
Well, some of the striking differences you'll see in some areas. Let's take Murfreesboro, Tennessee, for example. Here's a community that is really, really booming. It's really, really growing. And I didn't get a chance to. I wasn't there long enough to really find out what's going on. But homes are selling. New homes are being built. And then I come to different areas in different states, Michigan included. And it's sad to see entire shopping centers completely empty. There are areas in the country that are really experiencing. They're working hard and seeing some growth. And there are areas that are really going backwards. And it's sad to see. But I'd like to get into some of these areas and find out what is going on. What's making some of these real positive mm-hmm. growth areas, what's making them tick.
All right. Jonathan Rand, the author of Michigan Chillers series, American Chillers series, and many other books. Check out AmericanChillers.com, your website, where we can check all that out, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, and of course you have an online store as well, and all things chillers. Well, Jonathan Rand, we will turn you loose to go and do more productive stuff, which I have no doubt you're doing probably as we speak. But thank you so much for being on the Frank Beckman Show.
Thank you, Kathy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds great. It is time now for us to, take a check of our traffic with Lorna Stevens at the WJR Traffic Center.
And right now, Kathy, not too bad on our roads. We're going to cross our fingers and hope it stays this way. 94, 96, 696 all look great. We are watching I-275 and 75. They're also in good shape. We want to remind you, of course, we've got our construction that's on the Southfield Freeway between basically I-96 and Michigan Avenue. It's reduced to one lane in each direction. Delays are always possible there. But coming up a week from today, the Southfield Freeway between Grand River and the Lodge, all lanes shut down in both directions. That's May 16th. Once it's closed, it's going to be late October, probably the end of October before it reopens. Now, detours will be set up in the area, but we want you to have the heads up now so you have plenty of time to plan ahead for it. No issues to report on the Lodge. Woodward at 11 Mile Road, single lane closures are scheduled between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. in both directions. That's both today and tomorrow, so watch out there as well. And this report brought to you by Greektown Casino Hotel. Only at Greektown Casino Hotel can you do more and get more with your comps. From dining to bonus play, hotel stays, shopping, and more, experience more at Greektown Casino Hotel. I'm Lorna Stevens in the WJR Big 7 Traffic Center.
And your weather from the WJR Weather Center, the forecast from John McMurray. Sunshine today, the highs near 70. Tonight, partly cloudy, 50 to 52 your low for Tuesday. Some sunshine, a few showers later in the day, 70, 72 your high tomorrow. And for Wednesday, we'll see some showers and thunderstorms. The high 75 to about 78. Right now, sunshine, 63 degrees. Right now, text in right now, and Jack's Car Wash will send you a coupon for 50% off any car wash service at Jack's. You'll also be entered into a drawing for a chance to win a Jack's Unlimited Club plan, good for unlimited car washes for a year. Jack's offers full service inside and out, or stay in your car with express exterior car washing. Jack's also offers a full line of express auto detailing with no appointment needed, gives a free 48-hour rewash on any paid car wash. Text keyword JAX, J-A-X, to 68683 for your chance to win. That's keyword JAX, J-A-X, to 68683. And you will be notified if you're a winner by sending WJR a text message. You will automatically become a member of WJR's Mobile Club. You'll receive periodic texts about contests, promotions, and more directly to your mobile phone. Standard message and data rates apply. Reply keyword STOP at any time to opt out. You are listening to the Frank Beckman Show. Still to come, we are going to talk with King of New Media, Andrew Breitbart, who has a new book out talking about that. We'll look forward to that coming up. This is WJR.
This is the Frank Beckman Show on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's special guest host, Kathy Hoekstra.
Welcome back to the Frank Beckman Show. I am Kathy Hoekstra, filling in for Frank Beckman, and I'm real excited about the next guest that we have on the line with us. You may have heard of his websites, biggovernment.com, Big Hollywood, Big Journalism, etc. These and much more are part of the new media empire created by one Andrew Breitbart, and he's out with a new book, and he joins us on the line. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a guest hoster, too. I don't have a regular show, but I fill in, so welcome to the realm of guest hosting.
Yeah, it is pretty neat. I got the voice guy to say my name already, and I have the engineer Rob playing some really cool music leading into these segments. So I'm pretty happy right now.
Yeah, I actually, that's a big deal for me that I go in about an hour early and I get them to pick music that launches me into a segment. So, because if I hear music I don't like, it really bums me out. I'm weird that way.
That is funny. And, well, yeah, it might bum you out. And I know your taste in music, kind of like mine, the alternative 80s music.
Yeah, it's horrible for my family. I have this radio station that I just listen to all the time on Sirius that plays the same 50 songs over and over, but it harkens back like a John Updike novel, like Rabbit Run, to my period where I was young and virile and playing football and baseball.
Oh, there you have it. Nice to all. Well, I'm perpetually 24. So, Andrew Breitbart, who's got your latest book, The Righteous Indignation, Excuse Me While I Save the World, the righteously indignant one, joining us now on the Frank Beckman Show. You know, so many people know you more from the James O'Keefe Acorn videos than anything else, but you have worked for Matt Drudge of the Drudge Report. You helped Arianna Huffington launch her website before going solo. Now you're big time and you're a big target of the left.
I was at the right place at the right time in around 1995 when the internet started, when being at a cocktail party, people would say, what do you do for a living? And I said, I worked on the internet, and they would look at me like there was something wrong with me. Everybody, I grew up in Hollywood, was involved in Hollywood in the old media. If they worked in the news, they worked for CBS. So I was kind of looked as not an anomaly, but almost an embarrassment. Like, why would you spend time on the 100 baud modem, a 14-4 modem, ultimately an ISDN line. And it's kind of funny how it felt like kind of the turtle in the hair. You know,
right.
It's at a certain point, I went from being so far behind everybody to so far ahead of everybody because the internet basically was the Autobahn. And it's been a great experience. It's fun beating the mainstream media at its own game. Their arrogance, not the technology, is what's going to be their ultimate downfall historically.
That's right. Speaking of the traditional media, mainstream media, legacy media, whatever you want to call it, I did catch you last week or a week or so ago on the Bill Maher show. And I saw a video of you on MSNBC as well. That being said, I can see why a liberal would go on Fox News with Bill O'Reilly or Hannity. They know they're not going to convert any conservatives over to their way of thinking, but they go on because of the high ratings. They know so many more eyes are going to see them. You went on MSNBC, which has abysmal ratings. You were in the Bill Maher show. I don't really know about his ratings, but on both, you were fantastic, and you held your own on both programs. But a lot of people would say, you know what, Andrew Breitbart has more to lose than he does to gain by going on MSNBC or even Bill Maher. So why do you do it? I mean, it's going.
I wrote about that extensively in Righteous Indignation about going into the lion's den and fighting the fight. I mean, most of my book. I live out here in Hollywood, where we abdicated our responsibility to oversee and work within the realm of culture. It shouldn't have happened that way. We're the majority in this country, conservatives. I don't understand why we just gave up the fight. I don't understand why we gave up movies. I don't understand why we gave up television. I don't understand why we gave up, popular magazines and music. I don't understand why we gave up ABC, CBS, and NBC to people like Katie Couric and Dan Rather and Peter Jennings. And so I think that if we think that we're only going to convince people by being at events where we preach to the choir, then this is how you lose a country. And so I like to go into the lion's den, and I like to fight. I like to take on the people that on their side who have never really had a fact challenge. The one thing I know about leftists, whether it be on a college campus and professors, or it be, patronizing, cooler than thou Hollywood actor, is that they've never had their ideas challenged. And when you go and you get up into their face, they usually don't know what to do.
And you have just drawn the ire of so many people. I follow you on Twitter, and I talk about you being a big target of the left, and I'm struck by just the hate lobbed at you on your Twitter page. I want to read just a couple tweets about you, the ones that I can actually say on the radio. And here's the first one. I think Andrew Breitbart should be waterboarded until he cops to all of the lies he's told in tapes he's edited. Another one, this Andrew Breitbart dude needs a trainer and a haircut. Let's see. Oh, Breitbart is simply a grown-up Cartman without the charm. Of course, referring to the character on South Park. Now, this initially, because I'm a fan, so I get a little defensive, but I'm greatly amused because you retweet all of these hateful comments. For people who aren't familiar with Twitter, you can just hit retweet and it'll go out to all of the people who follow you. You retweet these. Why do you do this? You seem to thrive on it.
Well, the left has been lecturing me since my 20s on tolerance, a word that I believe they have trademarked, that the left is somehow tolerant and nice and pleasant and peaceful. I have yet to meet that person. Even Deepak Chopra, freak of a, I don't even know what he is, kind of a, you know, a new age guru, is an angry man. It's such a lie that they're tolerant. They're angry, angry, bitter people, so they're fun to play with. And so when I go and I look in my Twitter feed, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because they know that I retweet it, so they get really into it, and it's like a vile haiku strategy they have with me. And so I wake up in the morning and there's 100 negative things, and I look through them and I find the meanest, and I retweet them. Well, I've been doing it for about a year and a half, and I think that people now know, beyond a reasonable doubt, that there's no such thing as the tolerant left.
Right, absolutely. I do want to switch to something that I know is near and dear to your heart, because I saw you 2 years in a row speak at the Sammy's Awards in Chicago. Now, the Sam Adams Alliance is an organization that encourages grassroots activism, et cetera, citizen journalists. And you've gone twice in a row, and you are a celebrity of sorts. You're an author. You're a big deal. Yet you utterly embrace the efforts of the grassroots. Why is this so important to you?
Well, I appreciate the kind words on my quote-unquote celebrity. I live in Los Angeles around George Clooney and real celebrities. And one of my big complaints about the conservative world is they go, you know, people like me go to CPAC and people surround them and go, you're famous and you're well-known. And then I go to the airport and nobody knows who I am. Is that we kind of get caught up in our egos because, if you know, when we go to a tea party or we go to places where people are going to know us, we start believing our own press. I'm not a celebrity. I really am not. And I have a very normal middle-class life with two car payments and a mortgage payment. And so I think the conservatives that start believing their own hype and start having security guards and start acting, you know, like that they're actual celebrities are missing the point. I'm a Tea Party guy. I go to the tea parties and I walk through the crowds. I talk to people. I defend these people using the platform of the media that I have, because the mainstream media, I call it the Democrat media complex in my book, has done everything it can to presume their guilt as racist, potentially violent, all as a means to try and demoralize and demean the majority of the American people. And I think that with new media, we finally have, the middle class of this country, have the means to fight back against these arrogant Katie Couric-type people who have more contempt for people like you and me than they do for radical Islamists.
Right. I think you're preaching to the choir on that one. But you say you're not a celebrity. Well, you're enough of a celebrity that you have been asked to join the folks on May 25th here in Michigan at the San Marino Club on Big Beaver in Troy for the 2011 Oakland County Lincoln Day Dinner. You and Dick Morris will actually.
Well, I'm excited. I hate to say this, but this will be my first time. I've traveled the United States, but I've never been to Michigan. My dad went to Michigan State. My mother's from Wisconsin. My dad's from Illinois. Yet I've never made it over to the place where my dad and his sister went to college.
I'll be darned. Well, I went to Michigan, but we won't hold that against them.
Aunt Harriet went to Michigan.
Okay.
So,
all right. You do have some maize and blue in your family. That's good to know. Very quickly, Righteous Indignation on sale everywhere. I'm about halfway through it. It's great. It's a great read, and it's very reaffirming.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm an apostate. I'm a former liberal, and my book is trying to show the matrix on how people like me can be default liberals throughout their entire life, watching MTV, going to college, going to prep school, I didn't even know what a conservative was. I want to show people that that what conservatism is not the way it's portrayed by the mainstream media, and to show people what the matrix is and that it needs to be defeated. And I think we're doing a pretty good job these last 2 years. Thank the Tea Party out there. Mm-hmm. Thank the new media. I'm telling you, this is an unprecedented period of time. It's a historical period of time where the Katie Couric's of the world, I keep bringing her up, but she just got fired.
We're
actually winning. We are actually winning. We are going to see in the next few years a New York Times, Los Angeles Times go under. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. We acted as a checks and balance for a long period of time with these people, said, please be nice to us. Please be fair. Please tell the truth. Stop lying about us. Well, we're 20 years into that era since, you know, AM talk radio and the internet has come into existence. I go, if they're not going to be nice, if they're not going to be play fair, if they're going to call Tea Party people terrorists and racists when we're not, then we're going to do everything we can to take them down.
All right. Andrew Breitbart, author of Righteous Indignation, Excuse Me While I Save the World. We will let you get back to saving the world, but we certainly appreciate you taking time to be on the Frank Beckman Show today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathy.
All right, and this is the Frank Beckman Show on WJR. And welcome back to the very tail end of the Frank Beckman Show. I'm Kathy Hoekstra of the Mackinac Center, sitting in for Frank today. I want to thank Terry Lieb and Shelley Dierda, as well as Rob Vlasic in engineering, for holding my hand through the entire 3 hours of the program. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Frank will be back tomorrow, I believe, if he wants to come in from the golf course. Again, thank you very much. This has been a great, great time, great 3 hours. Hopefully we will be back again sometime if Frank needs a stand-in. I'm always willing to do it. And thank you, of course, to all of our guests throughout the morning. Hope you have a wonderful Monday. Enjoy the sunshine and the warm temperatures. This has been the Frank Beckman Show on WJR.